He folded his arms across his chest and lowered his chin and his eyes and his voice. "He called me," he began, "and asked me to come see him. I went the next day. I couldn't believe how old and sick he was and how lonely." A deep breath, a glance up at his brother. The pain was terrible. Even with the painkillers, he was in bad shape. We sat on the porch and talked about the war and how things would have been different if Jackson hadn't been killed at Chancellorsville. The same old battles he's been refighting forever. He shifted constantly, trying to fight off the pain. At times it took his breath away. But he just wanted to talk. We never buried the hatchet or tried to make things right. We didn't feel the need to. The fact that I was there was all he wanted. I slept on the sofa in his study, and during the night I woke up to hear him screaming. He was on the floor of his room, his knees up to his chin, shivering from the pain. I got him back in his bed, helped him hit the morphine, finally got him still. It was about 3 in the morning. I was wild-eyed. I started roaming. The narrative fizzled, but the clock didn't. "And that's when you found the money," Ray said. "What money?" "The money that's paying $700 a day here."
"Oh, that money."
"That money."
"Yeah, that's when I found it."
"Same place as you. 27 boxes. The first one had $100,000 in it, so I did some calculations. I had no idea what to do. I just sat there for hours, staring at the boxes all stacked innocently in the cabinets. I thought he might get out of bed, walk down the hall, and catch me looking at all his little boxes. And I was hoping he would. Then he could explain things." He put his hands back on the table and stared at Ray again. "By sunrise, though, I thought I had a plan. I decided I'd let you handle the money. You're the firstborn, the favorite son, the big brother, the golden boy, the honor student, the law professor, the executor, the one he trusted the most. I'll just watch Ray," I said to myself, "see what he does with the money, because whatever he does must be right." So I closed the cabinet, slid the sofa over, and tried to act as though I'd never found it. I came close to asking the old man about it, but I figured that if he wanted me to know, then he would tell me.
"When did you type my summons?"
"Later that day. He was passed out under the pecan trees in the backyard in his hammock. He was feeling a lot better, but by then he was addicted to the morphine. He didn't remember much of that last week."
"And Monday you took him to Tupelo?"
"Yes. He'd been driving himself, but since I was around, he asked me to take him over."
"And you hid in the trees outside the clinic so no one would see you?"
"That's pretty good. What else do you know?"
"Nothing. All I have is questions. You called me the night I got the summons in the mail. Said you had received one, too. You asked me if I was going to call the old man. I said no.
What would have happened if I had called him?"
"Phones weren't working."
"Why not?"
"The phone line runs into the basement. There's a loose connecting switch down there."
Ray nodded as another little mystery was solved.
"Plus, he didn't answer it half the time," Forrest added.
"When did you redo his will?"
"The day before he died. I found the old one. Didn't like it much. So I thought I'd do the right thing and equally divide his estate between the two of us." "What a ridiculous idea. An equal split. What a fool I was. I just didn't understand the law in these situations. I thought that since we are the only heirs that we should divide everything equally. I wasn't aware that lawyers are trained to keep whatever they find, to steal from their brothers, to hide assets that they are sworn to protect, to ignore their oaths. No one told me this. I was trying to be fair. How stupid."
"When did he die?"
2 hours before you got there."
"Did you kill him?"
A snort, a sneer, no response.
"Did you kill him?" Ray asked again.
"No. Cancer did."
"Let me get this straight," Ray said, leaning forward, the cross-examiner moving in for a strike. You hung around for 8 days, and the entire time he was stoned. Then he conveniently dies 2 hours before I get there?
That's right. You're lying. I assisted him with the morphine, okay?
Feel better?
He was crying because of the pain. He couldn't walk, eat, drink, sleep, urinate, defecate, or sit up in a chair. You were not there, okay? I was. He got all dressed up for you. I shaved his face. I helped him to the sofa. He was too weak to press the button on the morphine pack. I pressed it for him. He went to sleep. I left the house. You came home. You found him. You found the money. Then you began your lying.
Do you know where it came from?
No. Somewhere on the coast, I presume. I don't really care.
Who burned my airplane?
That's a criminal act, so I know nothing.
Is it the same person who followed me for a month?
Yes, two of them. Guys I know from prison, old friends. They're very good, and you were very easy. They put a bug under the fender of your cute little car. They tracked you with a GPS. Every move. Piece of cake.
Why did you burn the house?
I deny any wrongdoing.
For the insurance? Or perhaps to completely shut me out of the estate?